sound moves inherently. So yes, I'm part of the greater movement of the universe when I'm making sound, especially when it feels good. Like when it physically feels good, when it emotionally feels good, when it spiritually feels good, I'm contributing to the vibrational pull of the universe in a positive way and in a way that I couldn't do with through any other vehicle.
Hi, this is Daphne, and welcome to episode 7 of the Creativity Habit Podcast, conversations about art, creativity, and courage with artists, creatives, and makers. My guest today is a professional singer and a voice teacher who believes that when people express their true voice, their essence, they feel more human and more connected to humanity, and that connection can change their life. He is Davin Youngs, and you can find him at davinyoungsvoice.com. In this interview, we talk about singing and voice and how to use your voice to change your world. We look at how to find your authentic singing and creative voice, how we hide behind our voice, why singing can be so scary, and how singing can change your life. May you enjoy this conversation, and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Welcome, Davin, to the Creativity Habit Podcast. It is really fun to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat a little bit.
Yeah. So the way that I start every interview is with your creativity story, going back to your childhood and looking at how creativity showed up for you as a kid.
That's a really interesting question. I think as a kid, I didn't think of myself as a creative person specifically. But if I look back at myself as a singer, you know, it's always been something that's a part of my life. So, you know, singing as creation has been something that I literally exited the womb doing. And I've been performing since I was very small. I was 2.5 years old the first time I did. But I grew up in a house. Actually, I was thinking about this prior to us talking about the word creativity, and I was thinking that I don't think that I grew up in a house that identified as creative, but I think that we were thoughtful, and specifically my father was thoughtful with his choices, and in hindsight, that was one of the ways in which he expressed creativity. So around me as a kid, I had a dad who was constantly, he's a minister and a teacher, and he was making things, and he specifically, one of his stranger endeavors, which now I'm fond of, is he played the musical saw, and he would perform and take me to like folk music festival type situations or church performances. And so very early on, I was singing in public settings, particularly like faith-based settings. Some of the time in which my dad was playing the saw and I was singing, which was mortifying at the time. but now it's like, you know, I can romanticize it a little bit more. It's nostalgic for it. So that's just always really been a part of my story. And I was pretty, in terms of like singing and pursuing singing, like I was very driven from an early age. And I remember specifically when I was 11 years old and I was in middle school, I wanted to take voice lessons and I was pretty set on it. And there at that time, the knowledge of the voice was limited and that people thought you shouldn't take singing lessons before puberty, especially boys. So, you know, I got discouraged from doing that, but I kind of pushed through and found a woman who would take me in singing lessons as an 11-year-old. And I really credit her to my initial exploration of my voice, being able to kind of formalize what I was just doing for fun on my own. And that exploration sparked a real drive in me that has followed me my whole life. So creativity in the sense of being thoughtful with our decisions and making music and making things around that has always been a part of my family life and upbringing. And if I specifically think about it in those terms, that's essential to my story.
You know, no one's ever said it quite like that, being thoughtful, that creativity is being thoughtful. And yet, as soon as you said it, I saw that that is a theme in every interview I do with someone who identifies as an artist or creative, and I believe we all are, but there are those of us who strongly identify that way, and they all either speak to the thoughtfulness in their art, or it's just clear in the way that they're describing it how much thoughtfulness there is. So I really like that you bring that word into the conversation.
And I think if I were to dig into that even further, like part of my hesitancy in calling myself a creative person at a younger age was because I didn't want to be a cliche of creativity, especially as a teen. You know, you have people that wear these labels proudly, and often, you know, they aren't authentic. They're unexplored labels. So anyway, I think that a lot of my decisions throughout my life have been around this idea of wanting to be intentional with what I do in terms of how I label myself or call myself. And it's honestly only within the last few years that I have been able to wear that label sort of proudly and see clearly that my life reflects that in a more traditional sense.
Yeah, and that's very interesting because it goes both ways. It's both people wearing the label and it not seeming very authentic, and then the reverse of not claiming the label because we feel like, oh, well, I don't fit what that image of a creative looks like or an artist looks like. So it's a process that each person has to grow into in their own way. And I like that you took it on when it really felt authentic to you.
And I think that's part of growing up. You know, that's part of coming of age. And I'm 35 years old right now, and I keep having this sense more than ever that I'm a sum of all of my parts. And I never felt that way so clearly before. I feel better equipped to own all of the weird corners of my life. So I think that comes into this idea of actually being able to even be able to do this interview and own that label is not a great word, but that identity.
Speaking of identity, so we're going to get into identity because as this whole conversation is going to have as its foundation, this idea of voice. And I want to talk about this piece of identity because as an example, I love to sing, and my mom wanted to be a backup singer when she was younger. Yep. And I always joke that I am a backup singer because when I sing, people say, back up, back up. And so I have an identity, you know, of not being a good singer, even though I love it. And I'm curious, like, are some people just born where they can't carry a tune? Or is it all a question that we have it all when we're born and then we don't practice it? Or what is that with the voice? I know there's the natural talent, but then,
And that's the important part. I think that, so fundamentally, singing on a physical level is about coordination. And if you think about it in those terms, you can understand singing similarly to how you might understand an athlete, in that there are kids who automatically pick up a baseball bat and can swing it better than everyone else. That being said, anyone with two arms can swing a baseball bat, you know, some more poorly than others.
Right.
But that coordination exists, it's there, it's naturally going to be present in a different way with certain people. And we can't really, I mean, that's where the nature versus nurture question comes into play. And we don't really have any solid answers to that. You know, that's why are some people talented? We don't know. That being said, because it's coordination and because anyone can do it, there is the ability in any human being with two functioning vocal cords, folds is the sciencey term, to become better at it. And that is what most people don't know. They believe that because they have a voice, because they speak and they use their voice, that they should be able to be good at singing just naturally. And there are other people who are good at singing just naturally. And so that makes it even more confusing. But we don't think about athletics in that exact same way. Typically, you know, it has something to do with exposure, and we acknowledge practice. We don't think about instruments in that way. We usually assume that people need to practice and that they need to put in a lot of hours to become really good at that. And the same is true for singing. Even the people that are naturally gifted and naturally talented, they sometimes aren't necessarily masters of their instrument. And why that matters is if singing becomes something that they do over a long period of time, that lack of knowledge can bite them in the long run, and they can suffer problems. Those could be physical problems, you know, because there are a lot of variables that come in with the voice.
Is that what you mean when you say some people have unhappy throats?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really like crude simplification of the term. But, you know, the throat, so when we breathe, you know, air comes through our throat. It's the source of life. It's a really vulnerable place. It's the only place on the body that someone could reach out and kill you. It's the only place that someone could grab and do you in. It's a, because of its vulnerability, it is a classic space in our body to protect. That is an evolutionary necessity. We use the example that if you were in a car accident, one of the things that we typically do in moments of surprise or fear is to hold our breath. So we might go like that. And that is a way of protecting your life source. It's a way of protecting your breath. It's a way of trying to stay alive. And so there's a lot at stake in the throat. And the throat happens to house this cool mechanism called the larynx. And so in this place where we're prone to protect, we have this ability to make sound. And that sound requires us to leave that space more open. It's, you know, it's complicated. It's a complex act, but it's also thrilling because it's against our natural protective instincts. And that's why it feels good.
That's so fascinating. There's this juxtaposition then of here's this really vulnerable area, the most vulnerable area of our body, that our first instinct is to protect it. And yet to really express ourselves, to really give sound to our voice, we need to be willing to be vulnerable and open that up.
Yep. Exactly. That's exactly it. And that's why it's difficult, and that's why it's exhilarating, you know, simultaneously. That's why it physically feels good to do that. And that's why, so taking this to the next level, I was speaking to singing as coordination. There is obviously emotional, psychological, spiritual elements to making sound. And so those can have psychosomatic effects, right? So I actually worked with a woman recently who suffers from severe anxiety. And I mean, quite honestly, it was really hard for me to spend time with her because she can't speak barely. Her throat is so closed all the time that she suffers in making sound at all. But it's totally a psychosomatic thing. It's totally fear induced, essentially. And so that's why she came to voice lessons, to explore what it would be to make sound more freely. And it's going to be a long journey for her. That's a big deal. I mean, if your anxiety is so overwhelming that you aren't able to speak in a public way comfortably, you know, in front of a stranger, that's a long journey. But what an amazing thing it will be someday if she's able to stick to it, to be able to leave that area of her body more free, more open, more relaxed. I mean, that's going to be a big deal.
If, for example, if your voice sounds one way when you're in, say, you're very relaxed and you're comfortable, and then you go into a group setting, because I've noticed this happen, go into a group setting, there I am, maybe I'm at a party and there's several people, and it's as if I can't project as much as I feel I normally can. So that's just basically fear, like the throat closing up is...
I mean, I won't simplify it like that, but okay. It could be. Yeah, absolutely. It could be. I mean, it makes sense, right? You know, when I deal with performers and even think about performing myself, it's like there are certain responses your body has to different situations. That's one thing that sets someone apart who's professional, is they know how to respond to the way in which their body responds to, you know, fear or to anxiety or to, in performance, there are all sorts of unexpected imperfections that happen. And for the amateur, a lot of times that could be a deal breaker, right? It could shut your throat up. And for the professional, they know how to, and I'm again generalizing, a lot of professionals would know how to respond to that in a way to be able to keep that coordinated and open. And that is, I mean, it's totally normal. It's, I mean, we all suffer from it in some way. It just affects some people on a greater level than others. And a lot of times that the way in which it affects you has to do with your environment, your story. And so what you just said to me about feeling like you're supposed to back up instead of sing louder. But I mean, that has an impact on that there's a deep piece of identity tied up in that. Okay. Mm. So Daphne doesn't sing well. That's what she thinks. And so that has,
I have heard that echoed back to me, I will say.
Right. You know, and like, yeah. And whatever, you might not be carrying that around as a heavy burden, but that certainly damages one's ego. Right. And so in the greater implications for what does that mean for Daphne's voice? So Daphne, when she's in front of people, maybe her voice doesn't show up for her in the way that she wants it to. And so then these kind of stories, these tapes get played over and over again. And for some people, they're bigger deal breakers than others.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And also, just to draw the parallel between what you're saying about voice and all areas of life, really, and I was thinking specifically of all areas of creativity, but everything where that is the difference between the amateur and the professional is we all have the same stuff come up, the same doubts, insecurities, fears. And then the difference between the amateur and the professional is the willingness to work with them so that it's not a deal breaker, so that you move to the next thing. One of the things that you said in an interview, which really got me, this was actually an interview with one of my favorite podcasters, Rob Bell. He said, I consider myself an advocate for the voice. And the reason I am is because I'm advocating for my own, because I'm a singer and I'm a human being and the sound that I make is mine. And I believe in its divine power. So I believe that exists in each and every person I come in contact with. And I want to help them experience that and explore that. So I want to talk about the importance of finding your own sound and expressing that.
Yeah, I mean, who said that? That guy sounds smart. So the truth is this. I've sung my whole life, right? I told you that. I don't remember a time when I didn't sing. That being said, my journey is such that I ended up down a path. So I'll try to put this in concrete terms. I studied classical singing styles and techniques. And I went to college, a conservatory for music, with the intention of becoming an opera singer. And there was a lot of identity for me tied up in that. And when I graduated from school, I realized, as many 22, what am I doing? I don't want to do this. And because I had built this identity around this sound that I made, that there was a lot at stake for me, maybe more than the average person. And so I felt very lost. And quite honestly, I felt lost for about 10 years. And part of that was when I sang different styles of music, I made a sound that didn't always seem authentic to the style and didn't especially feel authentic to my expression of the style. And so I've ended up on a journey where I've had two very big influences in my life that have helped me find now, as a 35-year-old, a sound that feels pretty good most of the time, no matter what I'm singing. And my mentor, my teacher, is a woman named Jeannie Lavetri, who is a voice teacher based in New York, and she has a methodology of teaching called somatic voice work. And I always kind of joke that somatic voice work is a non-methodology methodology because it's not a series of do this, 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 and this, and you'll get this. But what it is somatic voice work is acknowledging the smart nature of our bodies and trusting that the body is intending to do the right thing. And if we listen to it and trust it and feel it and notice it and honor it, then our voice will show up in a really special way over a period of time, especially if we're doing exercises that promote those things. Now, the reason I say this to you, tell this in answer to your question, is that was a really hard journey for me because for a long time, when I was making sounds that were less authentic, I was ignoring my body and I didn't know that. So the way that can show up for a singer is after you get done singing, your throat feels sore and you think that that's just what happens every time you sing, like that's like the result of singing. And it turns out that that's not true. that now I can sing for hours. I teach some days as many as 10 private sessions, and I'm physically and emotionally tired, but my voice is still there for me. And that has a lot to do with the success of the way in which I'm honoring my body to make the sound. And what happens when we do that, Daphne, is that all this emotional and psychological and spiritual stuff comes up because the voice is so personal and so vulnerable, and it's our best form of communication. It's the way in which we make ourselves most present in the world. It's the way in which our presence can travel beyond the space within which we physically exist. And so there's great power in that. And so to feel like you're making sound that travels well, that expresses your essence, your being, that has superpowers. It has magical powers. It transcends the physical. And so I really believe that when people experience that, they experience their voice in this way, that they feel more human and they feel connected to the larger humanity as well as that which extends beyond humanity.
Okay, so there's a couple things there. The first thing is, what I hear you saying, Devin, is that when you connect to that, when you are able to sing authentically, when you're able to find that, that it's not just a question of, oh yeah, I'm singing on, I don't even know the terminology actually. It's like, I'm singing on key, I'm singing.
Yeah, sure.
I'm singing in tune, I'm singing on key. It's more than that. What I hear you describing is it's actually like I have found my own like place of power that I have now identified. Like I'm showing up in this strong, powerful, connected way. Is that what you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not static either. So it's not like this is a lifelong journey. So it's a continuation of, I mean, sound moves inherently. So yes, I'm part of the greater movement of the universe when I'm making sound, especially when it feels good. Like when it physically feels good, when it emotionally feels good, when it spiritually feels good, I'm contributing to the vibrational pull of the universe in a positive way and in a way that I couldn't do through any other vehicle.
I have never, like you keep saying things about the voice, I've just never thought of it that way. And it's so fascinating because I always think, okay, you take voice lessons because you want to learn to sing better. But then what I hear you saying is one of the things that comes up so much in creating an art in life is people feeling like, oh, I'm playing too small. I want to express who I am, but I'm not even sure who that is, or I want to play at a bigger level. And the place that you're coming at it from is, yeah, you take voice lessons and that helps you do all of that. It's not just about sounding better.
Yeah. But the thing is like it is, right? So when you do all of that, you sound better.
Yeah.
You know, if the thing, so if someone heard me talking right now and then they came to a voice lesson with me, they might be confused because my strength as a teacher is vocal function. So that's kind of like taking you down a path of exercises that is going to set up, to use my own language, to set up your throat to be a bit happier, so that you feel physically better when you make the sound. That can be a really technical process. So that might be me asking you to put your head in a different position, to relax your tongue, to breathe in a different way. Those can be really technical. But uniformly, when people follow that, and it's always an experiment for me, right? I don't have like a direct path. I have what I hope are more efficient paths. But when we follow that together and we're in tune and we're in sync and you're able to respond to me and I'm listening carefully to you and responding to you, then suddenly the sound will come out and the singer will go, whoa, what was that? And a lot of times the singer won't like it because it's scary. And it inherently will sound different, and that's scary because they're like, well, whose voice is that? But those are the moments where that I think that those, I always have said that it's like the lights get brighter in the room. It's like, oh, okay, we're on to something here. But those are the moments where I think we're really finally in tune with this greater picture. And I might not necessarily say that to the student in the moment. It has a lot to do with their ability to kind of comprehend. And it takes just a lot of time to understand these sort of things. But yeah, so I mean, there's this juxtaposition of, like I said, I always go back to singing is coordination. It's about coordinating these tiny muscles and ligaments and pieces of cartilage and tendons in your throat. And that's what we're trying to do. But that is our access to something that's much greater. And as a result, singing is rarely about singing.
That's definitely what I'm getting. Just now when you said people will sing and a voice comes out that they're not, either they haven't heard before or they're not used to hearing, and they go, and they're scared by it. And I had heard you say that a lot of times we hide behind different voices that we can make. Is that part of that? It's like there's no hiding, and like what's happening there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the most exposed, right? I had a voice lesson with a guy yesterday who was, you know, it was a first session together, and he's telling me how he can basically imitate anyone. And that's, a lot of people say that, and sometimes it can be true. A lot of times people that are skilled, this is totally just my observational evidence, I don't know if there's any real evidence behind this, but people who are skilled singers tend to be good mimics as well. Actually, you know, just to dig into that a little bit, I don't know if you've seen Jimmy Fallon does these, like,
he's great.
Right? He's amazing with his voice, but recently he's been doing these things where he has these singers do imitate other singers, like Ariana Grande. And anyway, they're uniformly, Alicia Keys just did one, but uniformly they're like really good at imitating other singers. And I think that actually has to do with their ability to be in tune with their own body and what imagining what the other singer might be feeling when they're making certain sounds. And sometimes when I'm singing, like when I'm working in a voice lesson, I'm modeling for other singers what I hear them doing just so they can hear it come back to them. But the point is, in all of that, is mimicry is one thing, and that's certainly a skill that people can develop. But we like to, from a teaching of singing perspective, be able to bring a singer to their home base, their neutral, their vanilla, themselves sound. If they're not doing anything fancy, if they're not performing, how does their throat show up for them if they're just doing a really basic scale with their most natural sound?
And what is the part that's so scary about that? Because you talked about somebody hearing their voice, hearing a voice that they haven't heard before. And then a lot of times they're scared by that.
I think, well, I mean, at its core, it's about change. It means maybe that you're not who you thought you were. And, or maybe you are who you thought you were, maybe that's the bigger implication. So I think it's, you know, change is so scary for most people. And so, and the surprise of it is terrifying. The fact that it's not what you expect. If you're with a good voice teacher, if you're with a good singing teacher, and you end up, I always say every voice lesson you should walk away feeling you made sounds that you have never made before. Every voice lesson, every time. And if you are doing that, it will never be what you expect it to be. The sound will never be what you imagined it to be, because you are limited by your own experience making sound, and your knowledge of what the possibilities are based in your experience. So a good teacher or a good coach in anything is meant to take you beyond your experience and lead you into a new one.
Yes. Absolutely. I'm a little bit blown away, I have to say, because even though I knew this conversation was all about the voice and all about singing and self-expression, you're doing exactly what you just talked about as a good coach would do with someone in a voice lesson where they make different sounds. You're giving me all these new perspectives on this connection between the voice and how we express ourselves and how we show up in the world and who we think we are and all these possibilities that happen when we, say, work with someone to sing better. It just is amazing to me. So one thing that's interesting is last night I saw a play about Florence Foster Jenkins, and one of the yeah, which is great, but yeah. One of the lines in it is that one of the actors said was, being a singer takes a good deal of trust because they never hear what everyone else hears. And that stood out for me in just, I mean, that's life. Of course, we never know what how anyone else interprets who we are. But I'd like for you to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, and that's just a fact of the matter. And people have a really hard time getting over that, you know. And a lot of times, especially early on, people will want a lot of feedback on, was that good? Was that good? Was that good? You know, it's all relative. It's all subjective. That's why I try to talk about singing in objective terms as possible when we're talking about learning singing, because good and bad is really, really subjective. But sounds that are more efficiently made are pretty objective. So typically, as a singer, when you make a sound that feels better physically, it generally sounds better to the person listening. Like, those two things are pretty, assuming you're in touch with your body,
yeah.
assuming you're actually aware of what's going on. But most people are, but those two things are go hand in hand. Recording. I mean, we have this like modern age of recording. So as a singer, that's a huge benefit. Like, we can hear ourselves pretty easily. I'm sure you've had to get used to listening to yourself.
Yes.
Your speaking voice,
yes.
Right? I mean, it's not at all what you think it is while you're making it. And so that takes time. But eventually then you just hear that version of your voice, and you're just aware that that's what I sound like when I record podcasts. And so you just become familiar with that aspect of it. But I mean, scientifically, what I hear is different than what you hear because of the way the sound is vibrating inside my skull. I'm not getting that external experience of my sound like you are. But the other aspect of that I'll just add is the fear people have of how they might sound is always a bigger deal than how people hear their sound. Most people don't notice. you know what I mean? Most people aren't thinking, unless you have an extremely strange voice, most people don't think twice about the sound. Unless something's wrong,
right?
They don't think twice about it. It's always a much bigger deal for the person making the sound than it is the one listening to it.
Well, and it's interesting what you say about the podcast, because in listening to my voice, because I also do the editing, so I have heard myself a lot. And in listening to it, I have actually discovered parts of my personality that I was not so aware of. So it's exactly what you're saying. It's which I wouldn't have known except for listening to the recording of the podcast.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that happens to musicians all the time. You know, you make an album or something, and that feels like, I think for most musicians, whenever they put together a recording or an album, it ends up feeling just like a stepping stone, because they discover more out of listening to that, that they want to add on to and grow into. It's never satisfying completely. You know, the same way a painter doesn't feel completely satisfied by a painting. It's like, oh, this is a step toward the next painting I'm supposed to do. Or this is a step toward a whole new genre I'm supposed to experience or explore. So I think that same can be said true about musicians making music.
Right. And as you say, finding their authentic singing voice. And that was actually something that you had said when you were talking about this period of time. This was another interview, but when you were talking about this period of time where you were working really hard to uncover your authentic voice, and you said it's not only physically, and you referred to this earlier in the interview as well, but you said it's not only been physically, but emotionally challenging. And when I heard that, I thought, so in what ways, Davin, was it emotionally challenging? And you may have, I know you've already touched on this to some degree, but are there other things, other aspects about how finding your authentic voice is emotionally challenging?
That's a great question. I think just coming to terms with like where self-perception meets reality, and being able to own the ways in which it doesn't meet up how you thought it was going to. So as a singer, there's, you know, I'm talking a lot today about the act of making sound, but that is nothing without song. The singer, the role of the singer is to convey the story of the song. And so that is where, when I was talking about earlier and I don't mean to overuse this word, but authenticity. It, when you feel like you're singing a song and you're not expressing the lyrics in a way that is true to you, assuming the song is something you've chosen and it's appropriate for you, that there's a lot tied up in that. Or if, let's say, you're a songwriter and your songs don't, you don't feel like you're getting the sound that you intend to get, that can be emotionally challenging. And there's an act of surrender in just giving what you currently have and knowing that you're on a journey, but also continuing to explore what else is there. And so I think that that, like, you know, to grab into our bigger theme, like, that often parallels whatever's going on in your life. So those times for me specifically, and I'm thinking to me like 5 years ago when I really started on this journey of realizing, like, I'm not making sounds that are the best for me. And I know that now. And that was a time of real coming of age in my late 20s for me in terms of, I don't know, finding greater boldness in who I was. I lived in fear of who I was for a really long time. And I still have elements of my personality that are like that. And that's not something that people would necessarily obviously know about me, because I can convey a confident image. But there are have historically been ways in which I've been afraid to be open with certain people about who I am. And that dealing with that corresponded or correlated closely to my quest for a sound that felt authentic, specifically for me in more contemporary commercial music styles. Those two things were so connected. Now, the other thing I just want to say too on this topic is I'm not like, I haven't like arrived. I'm not, I don't sing now.
I think you'd be dead when you'd arrive.
But, you know, but I think people think that that happens, and I don't sing now and go, oh, yep, that was it. That was pretty perfect right there. No, I still am consistently unsatisfied, but I am more satisfied than I've ever been with the sound that I can make.
So as Davin, as you become less afraid of who you are, and I don't know anybody who's doesn't have aspects like of being afraid of who they are, but as you become less afraid of who you are, you find that your voice, you come closer and closer to your authentic voice.
Yeah, 100%. And the shame of that, and any person will tell you that, is that, what do they say? Age is wasted on the young.
Yeah, youth. Youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah, right? It's like, all right, youth is wasted on the young. Yeah, that's the thing that sucks the most about that, right? And it's like, oh, but I didn't do this then. But that's okay.
I just
accept that. I accept that for what it is. But yeah, I mean, that is 100% true. And because the only reason I say that specifically about singing is because singing is athletic. Young people are able to be athletic in a different way than people who are getting older. And so that's why when I meet a young person who feels really authentic as an artist, that's very exciting for me. When their voice just comes out and it feels like they've always been doing it and they're eager to learn and they're open to exploration, like, that's thrilling. And those are typically the people that somehow connect with a bigger audience. It becomes more difficult, I think, as you get older, not only physically, but just in terms of the baggage that we bring along with us. But that complexity that we bring creates a more joyful personal journey. So even though it might be different in terms of reaching a wider audience, the individual often experiences more joy in the creative process when it comes to this.
So do you find that as we learn to sing better, it helps us better find our creative voice in other areas of our life?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
without question. I mean, I don't mean to over. I think that probably people listen to me and I'm going to get this reputation as like the crazy guy about singing. I don't mean to overstate it, but I actually do mean to overstate it, because yeah, I do think it's that big of a deal, because I don't know of anything as universal. The only thing that I maybe could connect this to is dance. Like, that's the only, I think singing and dancing are sisters. But there is something, you know, a lot of times we can feel hindered by our bodies in a different way than we might feel hindered by our voices, and vice versa. Usually someone in a wheelchair can also sing, if that makes sense.
Just say a little bit more about that.
I think because the actual mechanism that makes the sound is so small and it's so tucked away. I mean, don't get me wrong, people lose their voices all the time, and I don't mean to understate that there are people in who might be listening to this podcast who, for whatever reason, something terrible has happened to them, that they have lost their voice, maybe on a more permanent level. That is a small minority. And most of us, even if we have problems, and I work with a lot of singers who have pathology, who have, whether it be vocal nodules or polyps or hemorrhages or what have you, there's a lot that can go wrong with the voice. And it does, it goes wrong. But even most of the time when those things go wrong, the person can still use their voice. And that to me is just a picture of something broader, in that we all have access to this instrument, and it's universal and it's global and it's spiritual. And so I think that anyone with a voice, regardless of their skill set, should sing. I think that if they do, they will reap benefits, and there's actually like a ton of science behind that as well. And so that's what I plan to continue to advocate for, especially in more non-traditional settings, because I think that that's where the real magic happens.
Okay. I had a question I wanted to ask you, but now I need to follow up with something you just said. Yeah. Why do you think the real magic happens in more non-traditional settings? And what do you mean by non-traditional?
I think it's the element of surprise. So I mentioned earlier that Jeannie Lavetri, a voice teacher who has been a huge influence and mentor on me. And most recently, following the work I've done with her, I wanted to explore my voice in terms of improvisation, because I thought, okay, I have access to these sounds in a different way than I've ever had before. I want to use them in as free of a way as possible. And so I attended a workshop at a place called the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, with Bobby McFerrin. And the workshop was on a method of improvisation or improvised singing called circle singing. And I'll just kind of fast forward that was an incredibly meaningful experience for me. And it gave me this idea to use singing through these methods of improvisation in non-traditional settings, specifically more corporate settings. And so I've started a company called Voxus, V-O-X-U-S, which uses singing as a corporate team building activity, or as a way to connect groups that might struggle to be connected, because there's actual science and precedent for singing's ability to connect those people. And to answer your question back again, I just think that those are the people that are often most disconnected from their voices. And the surprise of being able to have access to that, especially in a group so quickly, and that's what these tools of improvisation allow them to do, can be really, really rewarding, can be very rewarding to anyone.
So that actually does lead to the question that I had been wanting to get to, which is this idea of, if you're feeling stuck in your life, whether it's emotional, mental, however that is, do you find that singing, you know, just singing at home or singing in whatever voice we have, that singing can help release the stuckness that's happening, the emotional or mental stuckness happening?
Yeah, I do. And there's actually I've done a little research. If you are a believer in chakras and energy flow, mm-hmm. I'm not a super authority on this, so I'm just going to give a really, a really loose interpretation. But there's this concept of seed sounds, and seed sounds are meant to be specific sounds that a person could make that would release energy flow in certain chakras. And as I studied just a little bit about seed sounds, one of the things that I've noticed is the sounds that are associated with these different energy areas of the body correlate functionally with what are the best and easiest sounds in different areas of our voice to make that would make it functionally more free. So to really on a very basic level, the lower we are in our voice, things like oh and ah, and that's, they would lead us into something called our chest register more easily. And the higher we are in our voice, things like ooh and e are typically easier in terms of producing a sound that would be referred to as our head register. So that's a little too much technical information, but the point is there is a specific correlation that if I can get someone's voice to free up to make those sounds, then we're talking about function, the way in which their larynx is working. There is a precedent, like a historical precedent, for there being a correlation between energy flow, you know, if those are ideas that you subscribe to. And that sometimes can have emotional release for people if they feel like their throat was closing up when they're trying to make a certain sound and then they're able to leave it open, there can be actual tears that flow. I mean, a lot of singing teachers experience tears in the studio. And I think that there's something to the energy of that emotional release that can cause that.
It's also for the people, like you said, as a singing teacher, but if the people listening, it's like sometimes when I'm singing, and I usually only do this with those I know really, really well, my close family, friends, where I will just belt it out regardless of how off key I am. And I'm having so much fun that my family is like, they are having a lot of fun, even though at the same time they're kind of going, ooh, but they're but it's like there's an energy shift. Like when somebody's singing and they're releasing that emotion or they're crying, also those of us who are listening will experience that same or some level of shift.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's why we go to performances. That's why we don't just play recordings.
Right.
Because there's something that happens on a really primal, basic level, when a person can stand up in front of a group and leave their throat open for an extended period of time in a coordinated way, it's exhilarating for anyone who's around. And a lot of times, if someone's doing that and people aren't having a positive experience, it has to do with their own stuff. You know, it's them dealing with their own stuff, not the performers. So I'm very non-critical when it comes to anyone getting up in front of a group of people and singing, because it's one of the most brave acts that one can do. And the impact, like you said, can change the world around the person.
That's beautiful. So I have just a two things that I do at the end of each interview. Before that, anything else that you want to say about either voice, singing, your experience around it, that you haven't had a chance to say yet?
Yeah, my only thought is that I just want to, you know, going back to that quote you read of me from Rob Bell, an essential part of this experience is empathy. And that's where, when I go back to this idea that we all have a voice and we can all make sound, and the reason I share my story and the reason I think I have success as a teacher is because of empathy and my ability to share in this experience with others. And that is one of the things, empathy and compassion, right? Because compassion comes from our understanding of what that experience might be like. But that's one of the things that I find missing in contemporary American culture. And it's another reason that this work matters, because especially when you're singing in a group together, you can't help but be aware of what others are feeling, because you're feeling it too. And I just have this idea that if we could get more people doing that, that our empathy as a culture and our compassion for others would grow. And if I were to have one wish, especially, you know, given the current political climate, it would be that just kind of openness that comes with that, that would grow. That would be my wish.
Thank you. That's my wish too. I love that. Okay, before my last two pieces then, is Voxus the best place for people to find you?
Yeah, so there are two places you could find me, and I'm working on figuring out how to bring my life into a more Streamlined communication. I have many jobs, four primarily, but two that are prime that I would love for people to know about. And the first is Voxus, and that website for that is Voxus Experience. It's VOXUS experience.com, and that is my company around getting groups to sing together collectively. It's marketed toward corporations, but I'm open to any group that is interested in having us come and facilitate that. And then I have a business around private singing lessons, and that is based here in Chicago, but we also do Skype sessions. I'm actually doing a couple later today with people in California. So that's my name, Davin Youngs, DavinYoungs, voice.com.
Great, great. And that'll be on the in the show notes and in the introduction as well. So the last two pieces, the first piece is I like to take a moment to just express my gratitude for you, the guest, for you, Davin. And my gratitude for you, there's a couple things here. One is you create this incredible sense of safety and it's interesting. I'm actually like getting emotional just saying it. And I don't usually get this emotional when I'm expressing my gratitude, but you do. I feel like you are this, you hold this space for a person to come in and be totally vulnerable, express this most vulnerable part of who they are in this incredibly safe and loving and compassionate way. And I am so appreciative that you're out there doing that work because I think it's really incredibly important. And the other thing I want to say thank you for is your focus on authenticity, on how important it has been throughout, really from childhood, when you said you didn't want to take on the label of creative or artist at that point because it didn't feel authentic to you, and that you didn't really take it on until it was authentic. And so much of your work personally has been about finding your authentic singing voice and then helping others find their authentic singing voice. And that just helps all of us show up more authentically in the world. And I think that's a lot of where empathy and compassion come from. So thank you for all of that.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And then the last thing, which you actually have answered in different ways, but I end this way, and so maybe there's something else that will come out, which is being that we're all creative, being that in my mind we're all artists, why do you think it's so important that each one of us tap into that and make our thing? Or in your case, sing our true voice, find our voice.
Because the world is so hard sometimes, because there will always be another challenge and there will always be another disappointment. In light of that, we have to make ourselves known. Actually, maybe that's what I should just say, make ourselves known to offer new light to a sometimes dark place. And the impact of that is first and foremost on the individual who's making, who's creating, and then it travels outside into others and then into the universe beyond. So that is about as broad as you could possibly imagine. And at the times when you're doing things that feel the most tiny, sometimes their impact can be the most great. So I believe in that. And I think our challenge as creative people is to stay in that space, is to have faith and trust in that. And that when we do, our collective energy can shift a sometimes challenging world that we live in.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Davin. What a great
Yeah.
time this has been.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, thank you.